Hey there, Mike.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Very good, very good. Got some great new headphones that I forgot to mention.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about those headphones for just a second.
I've had my eye on them for a while. Dan Benjamin's podcast and equipment guide, that's where I'm basing all future purchases for equipment.
Understood.
And he recommended these. Sony MDR7506. That's the name of them. They are ridiculously comfortable. They sound incredible.
They're a little, as they say here in Minnesota, spindy.
Yes, okay. Like I know now that they say in up in Cape Cod, it's wicked pisser. That sort of stuff. These're absolutely fantastic. They're so comfortable, and I can wear my glasses now when I record because I couldn't with the ones that I had before because they would push my glasses into my head.
Yeah. This is completely off topic of what we're going to discuss, but hold on. I need to take off my headphones for just a second so I can tell people what I'm using, just for, I don't know, since you just mentioned what you're using. Hold on.
Yeah, it's only fair. I suppose I should be playing some sort of music now to Vamp while Pat is checking his headphones.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What? How what?
I'm just talking to the listeners, don't worry.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm using Sony MDR. I'm terrible at remembering stuff. These X200s or here. I know. I can look them up on Amazon, right? Amazon.com.
So I think that because the MDRs, I mean, they're professional. I mean, but these headphones, they were like £70, which is ridiculously good price for what the quality that I'm getting out of them. And they're really good for music too. I mean, these are these are like music producers' headphones.
Yeah, these are headphones that are not on Dan Benjamin's list, but they are on the list of cheap headphones that sound pretty good for their price and are good enough for doing podcasting list. And that is the Sony MDR XD200, which on Amazon are $20.34.
That's good.
Yes. Cheap.
Just because we're talking about this, can I just point people back over to the Hurlybird again?
Ooh, yes, certainly.
Recently, I've started, I've sort of, the Hurlybird is the one-man show that I do about podcasting.
And which is a great.
Say again, mate.
Which is great.
Oh, thank
you. It's a great show.
And I've recently kicked it up again, and I'm doing a series from the start to onwards of how to create a podcast. So I'll be talking about this sort of gear a bit more over there. And if you just go to thehurlybird.com is all of the information on how you subscribe, and thepodcastingproject.com has all the list of all the episodes. So I will be coming to headphones and gear again at some point.
Correct.
Anyway, I've completely derailed the show. Should we go back onto what you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, because I talked about this quite a bit, along with a whole ton of links on the patrons' newsletter. And I'm not going to discuss or share any of the links there. You want that stuff. That stuff was for the patrons. That's kind of my promise to the patrons, is that, you know, they're going to be getting stuff that they're not discussing anywhere else. But I've been thinking a lot lately because of the book I'm writing about solitude. Okay, not solely because of the book I'm writing. I'm an introvert. A lot of people don't know this. People who know me, who have known me for years, would never in a million years guess that I'm in fact an introvert. In your standard Myers-Briggs test, of which I've taken dozens, I am an INFJ. That first I, or conversely E, in Myers-Briggs parlance, is introvert versus extrovert, right? And I am 100% introvert. I am 100% INFJ. I've never deviated on any Myers-Briggs assessment from that.
So you're pretty sure that's what you are?
pretty sure that's what I am. And what it means is this. Introvert and extrovert are oftentimes, at least from a Myers-Briggs standpoint, misunderstood. And the way it's misunderstood is that extroverts can't, at least on the outside, seem introverted, although that's more rare. It is certainly more common for introverts, especially of the type that I am, to appear on the outside as, let's just say that, you know, in any given social situation, I'm certainly not the guy who's in the corner being really quiet, hoping no one talks to him. that I can hold a conversation and I can be social and I can, you know, I can seem like I'm enjoying myself. But it's largely, oftentimes it's a show, and oftentimes it's there are certain strategies I've used to mask my introversion in those situations. Namely, I generally will shy away from places where I won't know anyone. There will have to be at least somebody there that I know, and that somebody will have to be okay with me kind of glomming on to them for the entire time, because I'm very uncomfortable otherwise.
Yeah.
But so in Myers-Briggs parlance, introversion and extroversion has more to do with where you derive your energy from. Extroverts are energized from social interaction. They go out to parties or go to events or go to conferences, and they get a lot of energy. They're charged up and they're ready to tackle the world when they walk out of that. Introverts, that kind of social interaction exhausts them, makes them physically tired. Usually it takes them 2 to 3 times as long to recharge from those sorts of interactions as it did to actually do them. Yeah, and so if I go to a 2-day conference, it could take me a whole week before I'm ready to engage with anyone in that sort of, on even more than a one-on-one level for the rest of the week.
Hmm.
And recently I just had a week where there was something every single night. Now I know what you're asking. You're saying, why, Patrick? If you don't like that, why are you doing that to yourself? I don't do this to myself. I'm married to an extrovert. I'm married to someone who thinks nothing of putting joint events on the calendar for days on end, of nothing but, you know, parties, fundraisers, and one of which we hosted in our house. Yeah, you get what I'm saying. Dinners out with you know, groups of friends and play dates. And I mean, it was just one thing after another.
And the wife's the boss, right?
Let me just say, if there is only one fear I have, it's of making her unhappy. And for no other, I mean, not necessarily because she's some, you know, tyrannical dictator, although she's got her moments. I love you, dear. I really do. I love you. But it's because I love her, right? It's because I love her so deeply and care for her so much, I want to make her happy, even if it means my own unhappiness. And yes, I know that's a flaw. I need to work on it. I do. It doesn't work. I'm back to where I'm at.
I can sympathize with you there, because I kind of just want to just make sure that Sammy is always happy. As I'm sure she will freely admit, sometimes I maybe put too much into that, and just I try and make her happy at times where she's not sad.
Yes.
You know, like, I think that something needs to be done when there's actually no need at all.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, my wife and I had a very long conversation about that.
That's why.
What?
We're a couple of crazy men.
We are. Well, we're crazy fools for these women we love. That's what we are, and that's okay. they're quite happy with this arrangement, I hope. so, So yeah, when things like that happen, I get even more obsessed about things like solitude and things like, and it's the places that that this thinking leads me. It's not just about you know, that solitude is almost the starting point that leads me in all of these other directions. Like last week, I had some very interesting conversations about population growth. And the fact that we are in the midst of a serious and severe population crisis and impending population doom. All right. Basically, that the population rate is currently growing at 1.6% yearly worldwide, which obviously means that in less than 100 years, our population will be doubled.
Mm.
The median age of said population, as it stands right now, is 27 years old and change, you know, 27 point something, right? Forget what the exact number is. And that's actually trending lower. So we are increasingly having, like, so we're accelerating that growth. So 100 years is just if we stay at the current rate, but the rate is increasing. People are dying later and less than people are being born. Does if that's making sense? So for every person dying, there's 2 point something people born in the world. This is a problem that is at the root of every other problem on this planet. If you want to talk about climate change, you have to at some point get back down to population, because that's that's the problem. That's at the root of the problem. If you want to talk about peak oil, population's at the root of that problem too. If you want to talk about solitude, population is at the root of that problem.
Solitude is I think is a dirty word. And I mean, you don't mean it in the necessary sense of being lonely.
Ah, yes. Yes, because as a person I heard who's a leading researcher on the area of the intersection of technology and solitude, her name is Sherry Turkle, and she's at MIT, and she's written books on this subject, and she is just full of wind in this area. I believe the exact quote was, "Loneliness is failed solitude." I'm paraphrasing the rest of the quote, which is, if we don't teach our children how to be alone, they'll only ever know how to be lonely.
Hmm.
And being alone is actually one of the earliest and most important lessons that we learn as children. Because it is that time alone and that time while bored. And boredom has been an increasing subject that has been popping up along with solitude. And just coincidentally, Randy Murray, my friend Randy Murray, wrote an entire week-long series recently on his blog about boredom and boredom's connection and importance in creativity. That in order to be truly creative, in order to be truly innovative, and to do the kinds of works and have the sorts of ideas that we need to have, that being alone is key. And folks like Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and Einstein have all written about how crucial solitude was for their thinking and for their ideas that they were then able to come back and work on and share with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that in this world of increasing ubiquitous connection, solitude not only becomes more and more important, but it also becomes more and more valuable, because the people who are going to be coming up with the next great ideas, the next Einsteins, the next Gandhis, the next kings, the next, the next great thinkers and leaders of this world, the next great peacemakers, are going to be those that understand the value of being alone, and that have the opportunity to do so. And that if we want our children to even have a chance at being one of these people, then we need to teach them this lesson. Not saying, no, you just need to leave your kids and walk away and ignore them. That's not what I'm saying. And Sherry Turkle does actually a great job of explaining this in her writings and her books and her speaking. But basically, and her version, and what she teaches about this is that we as little babies learn the idea of alone by our mothers being in the same rooms with us, but not necessarily paying full attention to just us, right? It's not while we're being fed or while we're being played with. It's, you know, a phone call happens, mom has to pick it up, baby's playing on the floor. Oh, suddenly it occurs to baby, she can have other interactions and not be engaged with me, and that I can be engaged with the play that I'm doing, you know, or with this play mat on the floor, or this mirror that I'm looking into, that I can be engaged with that alone by myself, that I don't need someone else in order to be engaged. And it's at that point that we begin to understand that we have thoughts, and that what we think is not necessarily what we're engaged with. It also has a lot to do with presence, right? A good example of this is, and some of the thinking I've been doing is the question, what is here? What is here, right? What does here mean? Especially when your body can be one here and your mind can be a completely different here. Here's an example. Have you ever driven, say, a regular route that you always drive from work to home? Gotten in the car, started the car, made it home, and having no recollection whatsoever of the drive because you were so engaged in other thought. Has that ever happened to you, Michael?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the idea of autopiloting.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. It happens quite frequently to me. But I tend to drive some rather regular routes and only for short periods of time. And often I'm engaged in other things. I'm listening to something on the radio that has really captured my attention. I'm not paying attention to driving. My body is driving. My mind is elsewhere. And that doesn't necessarily is not to the extent that I'm being put in danger or anything like that, but just to the extent that my body knows how to drive and I don't need to think about it, and my mind is off doing something else. And so more and more that presence shifting like that is very natural for us. It's a natural state of being. It's something that we learn very early at birth, and that technology is simply giving us even more opportunity to presence shift, where our bodies can be off engaged in doing one thing, but our minds can be outside of that doing something else, increasingly doing something online, or engaged with something that is out there in the ether and not present with exactly what we're doing right now.
Because I think if we were talking about the bad kind of solitude, That has changed a lot, I think, with the internet.
Yes.
Because you can be on your own without being on your own.
Yeah.
Because there's people to talk to.
Right. Well, and there's also converse benefits to that, right? So for the introvert who craves, you know, being, you know, solitude and being alone and this, that, and the other, these tools and devices actually, there was a great article I linked to, I believe, on Minimal Mac, written about this, that these things actually allow the introvert to create firewalls that make them look like they're busy and engaged and having a great time and being social and whatever, when in fact they're sitting at home enjoying themselves perfectly fine with being with not doing those things, right? And increasingly, I think that all of this stuff is kind of wrapped in together, and that the value of solitude is great enough, an important enough lesson that we need to teach our children, that they don't always have to be active and engaged with something, that it's okay for them to not be entertained by a screen. Or is okay for them to be engaged in a conversation about something that has nothing, you know, to do with anything else except the conversation itself. My little girl and I had this really wonderful conversation the other day while we were outside about, strangely enough, about the nature of death.
Okay.
Well, because, you know, she's three, and she asked, you know, well, why, you know, why do people die? You know, why they died? Well, they died because they got really, they really, you know, got really sick, and they got so sick that they one day fell asleep and didn't wake up, and that's kind of what it's like to die. Well, will you die? Yes, everything will die, honey. Eventually, everything that is living will die. Not everything. No, honey. Everything that is living will eventually die. This earth, this universe, this plant, this flower that you're holding in your hand, if you pick that flower and you just leave it on the ground, what happens to it when you come back out in a couple of days? Does it die? Yeah. Everything eventually will die. I know that this is a really hard concept for you to understand at three, but everything eventually will die. And that's why we have to be really happy with the things that live. Now, that's a deep concept to be teaching a three-year-old, having a conversation about with a three-year-old while you're outside playing hopscotch. But I loved that conversation. I'll treasure that conversation for the rest of my life, because it was the first time I had the opportunity to teach my daughter at least part of the basis of what drives me, of my faith.
Yeah.
As close to my faith practice as I, you know, as I can get without getting too religious on this little podcast. But you know what I mean?
Well, we've spoken about this sort of stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we spoke about some of it with Dave, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, about my beliefs that are kind of anchored in Buddhist philosophy. But and some of it is just plain simple truth, and that's a simple truth. Everything will die. And whether you believe there's anything after that death or not is a whole nother conversation. But just as this universe was born, this universe will die, and everything else will too. It's the cycle of this thing that we call life, and it's one of the great mysteries, right? So these are some of the things that I've been thinking about lately, partly driven by my strong desire to really become a hermit for the next 2 weeks and never talk to another human soul. like, seriously, you guys who are not introverts have no idea. And those who are introverts, I'm sure, are completely sympathizing with me right now.
They're just not going to love me, right?
Well, especially if they're married to an extrovert, because they'll be saying, "Oh, yep, she does that to me all the time," or "He does that to me all the time," and I don't know what to do. Because see, it's really easy for extroverts. Or, I'm sorry, it's really easy for introverts to understand extroverts. But it's really difficult the other way around. Because who wants to say no to communication and interaction and, and being social and having a good time? It's a party. Come on. You'll have fun. Oh, you're going to have a great time. This is a conference that is going to build connections and business, and you're going to walk away just full of ideas and energized to go out, and you're going to make more money, and who wouldn't want that? You see what I'm getting at?
I do.
It's one of those topics that I find immensely fascinating, and all of the kind of surrounding topics are just great. So, I'll put some links to some of the stuff in the show notes. That's what I'm thinking about lately, and that's what a lot of my writing is going towards lately. And that's what I'm most craving lately: solitude.
Thanks for sharing, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure. So, we'll talk later.
We will. Cheers.
Cheers.